BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
We've heard a lot about people living in residential care homes over the last difficult year. But what about the hundreds of thousands of those who depend on care in their own homes? For them, there's a perfect storm brewing.
Oh my God, the shock when I got the bill in, the assessment for the care charges. It's just unbelievable, from £17 a week to £107 a week.
Out of the blue, many are being hit with huge hikes in charges for care. They're up by as much as 300%.
I received a lengthy email informing me of my care charges raising from £15.35 to £68.35 per week. I felt shocked.
But at the same time, some are getting less care or even no care at all.
But obviously I pointed out that we weren't going to pay them, or Connor wasn't going to pay them, because obviously we hadn't had any services.
Social care faces a funding crisis, but as we slowly emerge from a costly pandemic, are those who most need care but can least afford it being asked to pick up the bill? First things first, what we mean by this non-residential care is support for adults living in their own homes. They may be elderly and frail, have learning or physical disabilities, or they could have a serious mental health problem. And they might need help with anything from getting up in the morning to shopping and preparing food. Unlike the NHS, in England, this personal care isn't free. And responsibility for providing it lies with 151 individual local authorities, like the council in Leicester, where Jasbir Singh lives.
And am I right in thinking you live in Leicester, but you're a Liverpool fan?
Yeah, that's right. I don't know why, I've always been a Liverpool fan.
52-year-old Jazz, dressed in a Liverpool FC top, is talking to me from the flat where he lives on his own. I wanted to go and meet him, but we spoke remotely because of his vulnerability to COVID. Jazz has advanced muscular dystrophy, a progressive illness that also affects his speech. He needs a lot of help with all his personal care and gets a budget from Leicester Council to pay personal assistants, or PAs. Until late last year, they came in for a total of 38 hours a week.
It was all fine until got to about November time, and it was like they wanted to cut my 8 hours a week of ledger because we were on lockdown and everywhere was shut. And on top of that, they wanted to cut my 2 hours shopping because I was doing my shopping online during the pandemic. And I did argue the case that, you know, because online delivery, they have a 2 hour slot and they can come at any point.
It's true that a lot of things were shut, but cutting his support by 8 hours meant that Jazz couldn't even do the one thing we've all done throughout lockdown and get out for a walk. He just can't manage that on his own. But even as normal life resumed, he was without those crucial leisure hours, so still mostly stuck inside.
Would you have been going out for walks or for time outside in your wheelchair in the park? Would you have been doing things that the rest of us have been doing in these last few months?
Yeah, I would. But, you know, because I've gotten weaker over the last 8 months or so, I haven't been out, you know, to meet my friends. I haven't been able to do anything. I haven't really been out for a walk that much either, because I haven't had my PA with me, because I can't lift my arms up at all. You know, so I need help with that kind of stuff.
Jazz says he hasn't been out for a walk at all this year. And there's another cruel twist. Although his care is funded by Leicester Council, Jazz has to pay a contribution, a care charge, out of the benefits he lives off. A few months before his care hours were cut by 20%, the charge he pays went up by almost exactly the same amount. So he was paying more, but getting less care.
Every 4 weeks, I'm paying £309.84, which to me is quite extortionate. It's like I'm being charged for my disability. In a way, it's a disability tax. That's the way I see it.
You see it, Jez, as a disability tax, the charge on your disability.
It's not that I don't mind paying something towards my care, just not £309.
That's quite an impact then on your life that this is having, that you're paying more, you're getting less care, and it sounds like you're more isolated, Jez.
It makes me angry. Obviously, I know I'm not the only one. I feel let down by social services because they are there to help, and they're not helping.
We asked Leicester City Council to comment on Jazz's case. They told us the reduction in his care hours was made following a review of his needs. They said it was noted during the review that Mr. Singh was not able to use the care hours being provided to him for community activities due to being clinically vulnerable. And the council said the rise in charges reflected the fact that Jazz's benefits had increased. But since File on 4 spoke to Jazz, there's been some good news. He'll tell us more later in the programme. So how exactly do these care charges work? Of the £23 billion a year spent on adult social care, about £3 billion, or 13%, comes out of the pockets of the care users themselves. It's a complicated system, not least because it's entwined in the bewildering world of benefits. To start with, if you have savings of more than £23,250, you have to pay for all your home care yourself. If you don't have significant savings, then any income except that earned through employment is up for grabs. The local authority adds up all your benefits, including the state pension. It can then make allowances for extra costs associated with having a disability, and it comes up with the charge you pay towards your care. They have to leave you with a bare minimum to live off. That minimum is set by the government, and it hasn't gone up for the past 5 years. Simon Bottery is a senior fellow at the health think tank The King's Fund. He says at a time in which local authority budgets are badly stretched, these user contributions are one of the income streams they have most control over.
Because of the pressure on their budgets, they're looking to every source to increase the amount of money that they've got to spend. And what seems to have been happening over the last few years is more authorities are coming down to the absolute bare minimum that they can get away with, the absolute sort of bare legal minimum, and that the authorities that in the past had been more generous have actually reverted back to that bare minimum.
But when the source is the person receiving care in their home, they're very often short of funds themselves. Having to hand over more of their state benefits to pay for care can have a really significant impact on their quality of life.
My name is Nadia Clark. I am 29 years old. I currently live with my family in Halifax.
Nadia, who has cerebral palsy, is speaking to me over Zoom through the electronic communication device attached to her wheelchair. She's profoundly deaf, and her mum, Katie, is with us on the call using sign language to pass on what I say. I've also had a quick wave from one of Nadia's personal assistants, who help her throughout the day.
I am dependent on my PAs to meet all my personal care and daily living needs. They also support me to have full control of my life. I do not choose to require support services, and I wish I did not need them, but my life is such that I am dependent on round-the-clock care. I enjoy going out to eat good food, going to gigs and festivals, drinking delicious cocktails. I love to travel around the world, which I have done independently with support from my PAs.
It's the kind of life many young women might lead, which, given Nadia's high level of dependence on human and technological help, is quite remarkable. But the independence she just described is under threat, because in February, in the midst of the third national lockdown, Nadia was told the charges for her care were going up by over 300%.
I received a lengthy email informing me of my care charges raising from £15.35 to £68.35 per week. I felt shocked. I was not given any notice or prior explanation. I have been assessed as needing the support I receive. So why do I have to pay for this support that I need to live a safe and independent life?
Nadia, if you have to pay the new amount, what impact will that have on you and how you lead your life?
Having to pay £68.35 instead of £15.35 is a massive financial increase for me. This will affect my life significantly. For example, it will now be difficult for me to live independently. I receive benefits and I won't be left with much money to simply live off after paying my care charges. Overall, the higher charges will have a detrimental impact on my life. I would also not be able to go to the pub. Ha ha ha. But seriously, I feel I will not be able to enjoy life, and this will impact on my mental health, causing me to be stressed and anxious.
Nadia, thank you so much. You've put that so well, and really in a very moving way as well. I'm going to ask your mum some questions now.
I'm not going to be as good as Nadia.
That was.
I am not as organized.
Actually,
Nadia's emotional listening to you. It was very. She's very organized with that.
Did anything change in Nadia's care or in her income during the pandemic that might have led to this massive increase that the council just levied on the charges?
Nothing's changed at all. Nadia needs 24-hour support. During the pandemic, the family were on a rota and we did most of the care and support. And some of the PAs started to come back when it was safe to do so, which was in August.
So tell me what you did, because you decided to try and contact other people, didn't you? You put it on social media, what had happened.
Yeah, so I was just like, how can this be happening? You know, is it just happening to us? There was about 100 responses from people right across the country saying, yes, this has happened to me, or yes, this has happened to my young person, or disabled people saying it happened to them. It became really clear that this was happening right across the country, and it wasn't just in our area.
We asked Calderdale Council to respond to Nadia's complaints. They told us they would not normally expect someone's care charge to go up by 300% unless their financial circumstances had changed significantly. In this case, they said, there has unfortunately been an error with our process and we have apologised to Nadia. And they added that the council is in the process of reassessing Nadia's disability-related expenditure and is working out a new level of care contribution. But why are local authorities apparently so short of money for adult social care, especially when they've had emergency cash injections from the government throughout the pandemic? Simon Bottry of the King's Fund again.
Local authorities' spending power has been falling, and although they've tried really pretty hard to defend the adult social care budgets, they still can't keep pace with the level of demand that there is for care. And as a consequence, they've got to find ways both to increase their income to spend on care. So you've got this arms race between the an amount of extra money that local authorities have got to spend, but that's dwarfed by the extra demand that they have. And that demand comes from a growing older population. It comes from a growing number of working age adults with learning disabilities, and it comes from a growing number of working age adults with other disabilities, and particularly mental health type disabilities.
And coming out of the pandemic, demand is even higher. In a survey shared exclusively with File on 4, the association representing local authority directors of adult social services, ADAS, found that since last November, there's been a dramatic rise in the number of people needing local council support for the first time. Nearly 70% of directors said they'd seen more people being referred from the community, often because of a breakdown in their existing care arrangements. Stephen Chandler is president of ADAS.
COVID is just the latest in a long line of challenges that adult social care has faced, specifically over the last 10 years, where we've seen nearly £8 billion worth of savings being necessary from adult social care budgets. We initially saw, in some instances, a reduction in the number of people asking for support, but that quickly changed, and we've seen a phenomenal increase in the number of people now asking us for support. So just to give you some examples, nearly 70% of directors have reported increases in the number of people with a mental health need since November of last year. And we've seen a 45% increase in the number of people who are needing support as a result of being in hospital.
And yet the government has allocated more money for social care, hasn't it? Emergency funds during the pandemic.
Yes, the government has, and we are extremely grateful for that. But we also know that we were poorly prepared, and the additional funding, whilst grateful, was targeted and is not sustainable in the long term.
It's not sustainable for the people receiving care in their homes either. File on 4 has spoken to dozens hit by big care bills and some of them now in debt as a result. Here's a flavour of what they told us, starting with pensioner Vera, who moved house in February. That meant a new local authority and higher care charges.
Oh my God, the shock when I got the bill in, the assessment for the care charges. It's just unbelievable, from £17 a week to £107 a week. And I get PIP as well because of my health needs. And they said, well, you can use that. But even that doesn't cover the £400 a month, what the want of is, or the care. Plus, if I'm in that much arrears, that means they're going to add on more money to pay off the arrears.
So you're going to be in debt?
I am in debt. I'm in debt now, £600. And every week it's going up £107 until I can get this sorted. But all you get off social services, well, that's not our problem. Fair enough, it's not their problem, but it's my problem. I've said to them, if nothing's resolved, if it comes to that, I said, I'll have to just stop getting the care in. And I need the care more now because, oh my God, my health's deteriorated.
In February, they decided that they were going to change the way that they calculated the contributions. So instead of paying £41 a month, they're now asking me to pay £151 a month. I've actually had an invoice for £288, which is backdated to the 28th of January. So it's retrospective charges. It would be extremely difficult for me to pay it. I mean, I would have to have my dog put down, probably, because dogs are quite expensive. Even then, I'd probably end up having to choose between heating and eating.
In December, I received a form, just fill in all your income details, your expenditure, things like that. Nothing had changed, so I filled in the form, sent it off, didn't think anything about it. And then I got an email saying that a letter was on its way, and I'd gone from paying nothing to the full amount, which is nearly £125 a week.
So you just to be very clear about that, you paid nothing at all for your 28 hours of care, and then suddenly you're told it's gone up over £100.
Exactly. Every time a bill came in, I paid a little bit, and then out of the blue, a bill comes, and this one said you owe nearly £2,000 and it must be paid within 10 days or we'll take further action. Where am I going to find that kind of money? It was awful. My stomach, I felt sick. It was so stressful and so worrying. I mean, even the £125 a week, I wouldn't have any money left for the food or fuel, or I wouldn't be able to eat. we'd be in the dark, basically, just sat in the dark and hungry.
Just some of the people we've spoken to living under different local authorities across England. A recent survey by the National Audit Office found the majority of local authorities expected to have to cut their budgets in this financial year. And councils reported that measures might include reviews of the social care they provide and increased client contributions. But can they really charge care users more to cover the budget shortfall?
My name is Kate Searle and I am a community care law solicitor and director at Martin Searle Solicitors. In my experience, many local authorities have abandoned their discretionary policies, which were more, I don't like to use the word generous, but allowed the person to retain more than the government minimum. And you might, you know, cynically call it perhaps a race to the bottom.
Councils, though, are supposed to, under the Care Act, the guidance says that you are supposed to be promoting independence, social inclusion, and ensure that a person is left with sufficient funds to meet basic needs, and that includes their food, their utility costs, insurance, etc. But it sounds as if, in some cases, certainly some of the ones we're hearing from, that's just not happening.
I think that's right, Claire. So in terms of the decisions that are being made by council social services departments, which our clients feel let down by, a lot of those decisions are within the letter of the law, but fall outside the spirit of the law.
It's not easy challenging council decisions. Appeals can drag on, as they have for Giselle Hoad. She's been in dispute with Surrey County Council for the past 8 months over her son Connor's care. He has autism and learning disabilities. And late last year, he started getting bills for care that, because of COVID, he still hasn't received.
Well, thanks very much for talking to us. You look like you're talking to us from a bedroom or somewhere you've got a lot of clothes hanging up above you. Connor's room.
Connor's main fascination in life is the washing machine, and everything just gets washed ridiculous amounts of times and ridiculous amounts of clothes, so that's everything hanging ready to go for another day.
So you do more washing than is necessary, do you?
Yes.
Tell me a little bit more then about Connor.
Connor's a very, very sociable young chap. He's 24.
Connor needs a lot of support. His comprehension and communication are very limited, which is why his mum's telling us his story. Although I can't see Connor, I can hear him. He's in the room with Giselle, pottering around in the background and taking care of another load of washing. Connor used to go to a residential college during the week and spent his weekends at home with his mum, supported by personal assistants who'd take him out to activities. But the pandemic meant no college, no carers, and no going out. Connor was at home with Giselle 24 hours a day.
It was just us, because the personal assistants, they also work in schools, so they were very high risk to be coming in. So no, I mean, we probably saw them about 5 times in the year, I think. It was very, very little.
While he was in college, Connor was the responsibility of children's social services, which are provided free. But once he was at home, he was transferred to adult social care, and that meant he was liable for care charges, even though the carers weren't there.
Originally, when he got the letter, they asked for something like £115 a week. They eventually agreed that he hadn't had any sort of disability-related expenses taken into account and things like that. So then set the charges around, I think, £69 it was. But obviously I pointed out that, well, we weren't going to pay them, or Connor wasn't going to pay them, because obviously we hadn't had any services.
If he had to pay that £70 roughly a week for his care, when he gets the care, because he's not getting it at the moment, what would that mean for him in terms of how he lives his life and the things he can do?
He won't be able to go off and do his activities, his concerts, his, you know, he won't be able to enjoy his money like other people do. It's going to mean he, you know, it curtails his social life. One of the things that obviously the Care Act is supposed to encourage the independence and the social interaction, but they're not doing it by doing this to people at all.
What's the effect on families like yours?
Local authorities are, I think they're expecting too much of family carers. One, to obviously pick up the pieces in terms of support, but also financially. Because Connor lives at home, a lot of the things that they would take into account of a person living independently, they won't, because they expect carers to pick up that bill or parents to pick up the bill. And invariably, you know, if these charges come about, it will end up being myself picking up the bill. I'm struggling too financially. I've made that clear to the local authority. It's not been an easy year for any of us.
We put specific questions about Giselle and Connor's situation to Surrey Council. They said they couldn't comment on individual cases, but that they follow all government guidance in determining how care is funded. So how do the people responsible for decisions about care charges across the country explain what's been happening to users of care since the pandemic? A question for Stephen Chandler from the Association of Directors of Adult Social Services.
We've heard from numerous people in this programme who are receiving care in their homes and who've seen the charges that they pay for that care go up steeply in the past year, in some cases even leaving them in debt. And they feel, some of them, that they're being used to plug the financial hole, that they're paying for these budget problems.
Airdus and councils would dispute that there is any policy or strategy to address funding shortfalls through directly charging increases to people who use its services. Charging operates within a very defined national framework, and no council wants to leave its citizens with less money than is necessary for them to live and sustain a decent lifestyle.
It does seem a rather crazy system in which the government pays benefits to the individual, and the individual then has to hand over a very large proportion of those benefits to the council to pay for their care.
To the person on the street, it does sound strange and perhaps even at times ludicrous. Remember, though, that councils have to operate within a very clear framework when it comes to assessing individuals for their contribution towards their care and the amount that individuals have to contribute. Councils, after 10 years of budget cuts, are in a very difficult position. So they're having to carefully consider all options. If that means they increase some of the charges, clearly remaining within the parameters that they're able to, then some councils will have had to have done that. That's not because they wish to penalise their citizens, but that is because they have no other option. The current adult social care system is unsustainable from everyone's point of view. This is why the government must deliver real social care transformation once and for all.
The calls for a transformation of social care are growing louder, but will it ever happen? Over the past decade, there have been plenty of promises from successive governments that reform is on its way.
One of the biggest things we've got to get right in our public services is social care. The overwhelming complaint you hear today, and I hear it as a constituency MP, is helplessness. People given little or no choice about the care they can get at home.
We are proposing the right funding model for social care. We will make sure nobody has to sell their family home to pay for care. We will make sure there's an absolute limit on what people need to pay.
We will fix the crisis in social care once and for all with a clear plan we have prepared.
Promises that are all so far unfulfilled, and in this year's Queen's Speech, just 9 words on social care.
Proposals on social care reform will be brought forward.
We asked the Care Minister, Helen Whatley, to join us on the programme. She declined. But in a statement, her department said the government was committed to sustainable improvement of the adult social care system. They said that, as affirmed in the Queen's speech, the government will bring forward proposals later this year to ensure every person receives the care they need, provided with the dignity they deserve. And the statement added, throughout the pandemic, we have provided almost £1.8 billion in specific funding for adult social care. Jeremy Hunt is a former Conservative Health Secretary and now Chair of the Commons Select Committee on Health and Social Care. What does he make of what Farallon 4 has found?
Well, on a human level, these are devastating stories. But on a bigger level, they are a reflection of the extreme fragility of the system and the fact that councils basically don't have as much money as they need to discharge their statutory obligations. And this is why we've reached breaking point and we must find a long-term solution to the crisis in social care.
Why is that so hard to do? You served in cabinet under two prime ministers, much of it as health secretary, briefly health and social care together. What are the discussions that cabinet has on social care? Give us a flavour of why it seems so hard to move this forward.
Well, one of the reasons it's difficult is because it is expensive. But the challenge is to help the Treasury understand that if you don't address these issues, in the end, the NHS has to pick up the bill. It's totally self-defeating because a hospital bed costs roughly three times more than a care home bed, and a care home bed costs roughly three times more than looking after someone in their own home. And so what you're ending up doing is pushing more and more people. If you want to look at this on a totally financial basis, but I actually think we have to look at it on a human basis as well. But if you just want to look at the numbers, you're pushing people into the most expensive care available rather than what we should be doing, which is supporting people to live happily, healthily, independently at home for longer.
Is part of the problem that we're seeing now that the central government is pushing its financial problems down to local councils, and those local councils are then pushing their financial problems onto the individuals, the people who can least afford it?
I think there may have been a time where, you know, in the austerity period, where local councils had some of the steepest cuts compared to the rest of the public sector. Well, I think we have to make sure that local authorities have the funding that they need. We say between £7 and £10 billion extra a year by the end of the parliament. That is a very significant increase. But in the end, if we want to solve these problems, then we have to say this is our priority.
Adult social care systems vary across the UK. Wales is similar to England, although charges for home care users are capped at £100 a week. In Northern Ireland, most personal care in the home is free. While in Scotland, the government says it's going to radically reform adult social care. It'll follow the recommendations of an independent review led by former government health official Derek Feely.
In Scotland, we have free personal care, but that doesn't cover absolutely everything. So in the last financial year in which we were able to look, local authorities were still collecting in excess of £50 million in charges. And we don't think that people ought to be charged for the support they need to live a good life in their homes. And so we are recommending that those charges ought to be removed.
The Scottish Government says it'll also adopt the review's suggestions that a national care service be set up to replace the fragmented system of local council care. But Derek Feely says reform must be about more than organisational change.
We want to create a new narrative about social care, a shift in our thinking, away from thinking about social care as a burden on society towards thinking about it as an investment. So we are redesigning our system of social care support.
Do you think that the kinds of things you're describing, a national care service and this sort of investment in people, would work in England?
I think that the shift in thinking that is required in Scotland is also required in England. I think we need to stop seeing social care as a burden and start to see it as an investment. We need to stop seeing it as about crisis and start seeing it as about helping people to live healthy lives. Stop seeing it as about managing needs and eligibility and start seeing it about as being about human rights.
In the fragmented system of social care, there are no hard numbers to tell us how many people are paying more. But it's clear from what we've heard that costs for many have gone up, even when they've had less care, leaving them struggling and in some cases in debt. It's not surprising, perhaps, that some feel they're carrying the burden of the costly pandemic. Everyone agrees social care reform is essential, but the people on the receiving end of care in the home are rarely heard in the debate, and they urgently need to be listened to. But let's end with some positive news for Liverpool superfan Jasbir Singh. As he told us at the start of the programme, in November, 8 hours of his care for leisure activities were cut. A couple of days after File on 4 contacted Leicester Council for comment, Jaz got a call from them.
Yeah, I got a call from Social Services. They said that I've got my 8 hours back.
So they've given you back the 8 hours that they've taken away for your leisure time. Jaz, what's the first thing you're going to do then?
Definitely going to a park for a long walk. Excited to go to, especially the cinema, to meet my best friend, who I haven't seen in a long while. Going to see the football again. I really miss that, just to get out and about and spend more time with other people.
A welcome outcome for one care user, but hardly the system-wide reform that social care so clearly needs.
Freedom. Freedom, independent freedom.
Enjoyed this podcast? Discover more music, radio, and podcasts on BBC Sounds.